This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of November 18th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. The Indianapolis television market can boast a particular distinction, although I don't think anybody would mind if others jumped on this particular bandwagon. Indianapolis is the only TV market in the top 25 nationwide with a local station owned by an African American. Dewan McCoy and a small investor bought WISH-TV and sister station WNDY-TV, which we know as Channel 8 and Channel 23, earlier this year for $42.5 million. The acquisition from Nexstar Media Group, which was forced to sell the stations as part of a broader national deal, closed in September. Now, the distinctions don't end there. Dewan is an Indianapolis native. He grew up on the West Side, graduating from Ben Davis High School and Butler University. His business degree led to a career in media. And in the last dozen years, he has developed a national reputation for buying and turning around underperforming stations. He bought seven small stations in Texas in 2007 for $3 million. 5 years later, he sold them for $21 million. In 2015 and 2016, he bought five stations in Evansville, Indiana, and Lafayette, Louisiana, for a combined $66 million, with backing from investment firm Bain Capital. Earlier this year, they sold them for $165 million. But McCoy says he's in it for the long haul with Channel 8 and Channel 23, which is good because a turnaround could take some time. WISH lost its affiliation with CBS in 2015, and although it's now allied with the second-tier CW network, it definitely misses the strong primetime lead-in, as well as all the eyeballs that would see news promotions during the regular programming. At its best, WISH is still middle of the pack. But Dewan believes in the power of local ownership, as we'll hear in a few minutes here, and he's planning on both beefing up his local staff and spending millions of dollars on the tools of the trade, such as broadcast equipment and even new vehicles. He's a busy guy who does a lot of traveling, so he spoke to us via phone about his plans. Here's our conversation. Mr. McCoy, thanks so much for joining us on the IBJ Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, let's start off by going back in time a few decades. And there's no reason that you would know this, but you and I both grew up in Indianapolis at essentially the same time. We're both 52 years old. You went to Ben Davis. I went to Broad Ripple. My question is, which local TV news did you watch when you were growing up in Indianapolis?
So, good question. I was a Channel 13 fan. I was a Bob Gregory, Chuck Lofton fan, and so I did the majority of my watching on Channel 13.
Now, do you remember why you liked that newscast? Was it something that made an impression on you?
You know, I can't remember at the time. I think it was probably the best reception at the time. It was the station that had the best reception on my TV. And when I clicked through, that was the one that caught my eye.
Now, did local TV news make any kind of impression on you at that time as a possible career? Did you ever think, oh, okay, this looks interesting. I would maybe like to be involved in the media somehow.
You know, it's funny. It never did, because I didn't know what the career paths were for broadcasting. I can tell you this. One of the things that I used to do when I was growing up, once we got cable, I used to flip through TV stations and try to find something to watch. Growing up, you didn't see too many African Americans and held in a positive light on TV. Flipping through, WGN had the only African American anchor on in the market.
Yeah, and that was Chicago.
That was Chicago, and I got it on in Indianapolis at the time on cable, and I remember stopping and watching the African-American anchor with the mustache, and I can't remember his name, because I had never seen a African-American person like that on TV held in a good light that wasn't an athlete. This is the early 80s, late 70s and early 80s when I was doing this. So I do vividly remember that experience from a TV perspective. I'll tell you how I got into TV. I did not have any incline of what positions or jobs were available four TV stations. When I was a senior at Butler University, the Indianapolis Star wrote a full-page article on me, and it pretty much said, hey, here's a local guy that grew up in Indianapolis, grew up on the west side of town in Hallville, went on to Butler. He's one of a few handful of African-Americans graduating from Butler University, and here's a local boy, quote-unquote, done good.
Sure.
The sales manager for WTTV, Channel 4, his name is Bernie Sowers. At the time, he was a 60-something-year-old sales manager, called me up and said, hey, I read your article, and I heard you're looking for a job in sales and marketing. Would you like to interview for a TV job? I said, sure. I had already taken a job selling copiers and fax machines, but I went in for the interview, and make a long story short, 6 months later, he hired me as an account executive in TV, and I never left.
What did you discover that you liked about it?
So for me, I was a business marketing major, and I love marketing. I love business, and being an account executive for a station like WTTV, which had all the IU basketball games at the time, Purdue basketball games, it was a traditional independent station that had a lot of local sports, and I like sports. And it allowed me to be creative, and it allowed me to use my business sense to create an income for me and my family. The fact that I was looking for a job in sales, the reason I wanted to look at a job in sales was that I wanted to control my own income. I had job offers from a bank making a flat salary, but having an athletic background, looking back now, there was an innate desire for me to be able to hit the throttle and make more money or 12 back if I want to relax a little bit. And sales, the way Channel 4 presented it to me, gave me that opportunity to do that.
And then you moved on. You moved on and had positions all over the country.
I was, I guess, cursed, for lack of a better word, with the ambition gene. Once I figured out each facet of my job as an account executive, I was ready for the next challenge. And I recall going to my manager saying, hey, you asked me to do new business, I did new business. You asked me to be an agency guy, I've done that. Give me something else to do and I'll show you that I can do that. So I got to a point where they couldn't give me anything else to do that got me excited. So I wanted to become a manager. I thought that was the next logical step for me. My sales managers and my general manager knew I was eager, ambitious, and ready to move to the next step. They offered me the director of sports marketing job at Channel 4. That was a quasi-management position that I took, but I really wanted to be a leader and be a coach of people. And that director of sports marketing job, I didn't feel gave me that opportunity. So I reached out to a former general manager that ran WTTV. He was buying stations, and I think I was probably 26 at the time. And he offered me a job as a director of sales for two stations that he had in Greenville, Newbern, North Carolina. And he made me an equity partner at that early age. So that was when I first left Indianapolis, and it didn't stop from there.
So let's come back all the way around. Now you're back in Indianapolis. Sure. How does it feel to be an owner of a local TV station in your hometown?
It is a feeling that I really can't describe to people. It's that overwhelming and that positive of a feeling. I have made TV my career, and to have an opportunity to come full circle and to own a large market TV station in my own hometown, and it's a powerful news station that has built-in ratings, and the secondary station WNDY is a sports station. It just has my name written on it. Keep in mind what WTTV Channel 4 was when I got into the business. It was a sports station. It was a 10 o'clock news station. It was an independent station. And that became my foundation for how I knew TV. And at this point in my career, I come back in my hometown and I own a bigger and two stations, bigger and better stations than Channel 4 that has unlimited potential. I mean, it's just a dream come true, and it's just an unbelievable feeling that is really, really hard for me to describe.
Well, you've got your work cut out for you. What needs to happen at Channel 8 for it to become more competitive and make up some ground with the viewers and advertisers?
I think it's a very competitive station now. In each news day part, we are either number 2, 3, or a very close number 4 in news across the board. So we're pretty solid now. I believe the upside will be the fact that the station now has somebody that loves the station, and I love the station. It's personal with me. The previous owners probably loved the stations, but didn't love them as much as I'm going to love them. With that being said, when I'm investing a inordinate amount of money in the stations from an infrastructure standpoint, from an automobile standpoint, from an employee standpoint, to make that station one of the, if not the best television station, not only in Indianapolis, but the state of Indiana. So part of it is just the passion that I'm bringing, the localism that I'm bringing, my previous knowledge of owning or operating a independent station like WNDY and like Wish in WTTV Channel 4. That's the main thing that the station needs. We're also going to market a lot better. Again, I'm a marketing guy, and I see the world from a marketing set of goggles, if you will. I believe there's tremendous upside in how we've promoted our station, how we've marketed our station to the community. That's going to help elevate us and regain viewers from other television stations.
Refresh my memory. How much did you buy the two stations for?
Public price is $42 million for WNDY and Wish TV.
And that is mostly you, but you have I think there's a little bit of private equity in there?
Yeah, I have a minority investor that participates in this transaction only. Not Bain Capital is not in this deal, so it's not a private equity-backed company. This is a Dwan McCoy backed company with a small minority investor that is a friend of mine that actually introduced me to Bain Capital.
Okay. So most of that $42 million is yours.
Yeah, mine and senior debt. Yes.
And I bring that up because you mentioned how much you wanted to invest. How much are you planning on investing in the operation?
Over the next 24 months, we have allocated to invest almost $3 million in infrastructure. We're building our own master control section at the TV station where we're hiring 8 master control operators. We bought a new fleet of vehicles. We are adding salespeople. We are buying camera equipment, buying new computers. So there's a lot of infrastructure that we're adding to the facility. When before I purchased it, a lot of the digital platform, the master control, the trafficking of product was outsourced, but I don't outsource any of my product. I manage, own, and operate every aspect of the TV station.
Wow. So over the next 2 years, $3 million in costs there. Now, I know yes. You're also interested in doing some hiring, and tell me a little bit more about those plans.
So part of, I think, my growth opportunity is to increase the number of salespeople that we have on the streets. Right now, we have 1 local sales manager, 1 digital sales manager, and 1 director of sales. We're going to increase that locally to 2 local sales managers and increase our bodies on the streets from 8 to 16 bodies over the next 4 months. We are going to add a traffic department where we have a traffic manager and a traffic assistant to locally traffic all of our commercials. We're going to hire 8 master control operators to manage all of our master control operations where we traffic and air commercials and receive feeds for all of our syndicated programming. So then we're going to add bodies in our news department. I think adding bodies in our news department and providing our viewers in the state of Indiana a more thorough educational type news product where I'm bringing back more of beat reporters, so to speak. Don't know if you saw my announcement, but I made the press release of hiring the first multicultural reporter in the state of Indiana, if not the United States. that person is going to be solely dedicated to discussing multicultural issues in the state of Indiana from multicultural viewers' perspective. I did a press release on hiring a medical reporter, and I believe by hiring a full-time medical reporter, that's an opportunity that we have to become medical specialists within the television viewing area.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with the IBJ Podcast. I'm Mason King, and we're talking this week with DeJuan McCoy, the new local owner of local TV stations WISH and WNDY. So how many employees do you plan to add, say, in the next 2 years?
Over the next 18 months, we're going to be plus 21 from where we currently are. Right now, I have about 120 employees. So once we're all said and done, we're going to have about 140, anywhere between 140 and 145 employees.
Well, employees are expensive. I mean, that's an annual cost. How much more are you going to be investing in just annual operations than the previous owner did?
I look at it as an investment, just as that. I believe by investing in the right reporters, the right salespeople, I will get a return on investment from increased ratings and increased amount of revenue that my salespeople come in. So I really don't look at it from a cost standpoint. I have an entrepreneurial brain, so I look at everything from a investment standpoint and an eventual return on investment. So I know if I follow my process and I do the right marketing strategy and have the right people in place, the money that I'm investing in the long haul, I'm going to get a handsome return, whatever that might be, on those investments.
But in terms of like annual budgeting, though, I mean, how much is your budget going to go up?
Yeah, the budget's going to go up a pretty good percentage. But again, I'm not playing short game here. I'm taking a financial, so to speak, short-term loss, or I'll cut my profits with hopes of regaining those profits plus some. So I'm already making money on the television stations. I'm just reinvesting those profits into areas where I think I'm going to get a really handsome return on.
Were the two stations together, are they profitable just when you bought them?
Yes.
Okay. How profitable?
Very profitable. I don't want to give a number, but they were very profitable. You base your purchase price on the profitability of the station. If the stations weren't profitable, it would be a zero value. So I'll just leave it at that.
Those two reporting positions that you mentioned, the medical reporter and multicultural reporter, had you tried those at previous stations?
You know what? No, I didn't. I didn't try them because, and again, I had people ask me, do you operate these stations differently than you do your other ones? I said, yeah, totally differently. Okay. When I bought the other stations, part of my strategy was a lot different than this strategy. This is my hometown, and I'm personally vested in these stations. When I operate these stations, I'm again affecting my personal community where I was born and raised. I know very acutely what it's about. I'm representing my high school. I'm representing Butler University. I'm representing my family. So there is a different type of approach when I look at these stations than what I did with my other stations. I know for a fact in the Indianapolis market that multiculturalism and this medical reporter is very much needed in the eyes of the viewer. Why? Because those two categories are grossly underrepresented on mainstream news. I know my marketing position from a station standpoint in the market. Okay. I know where I rank from a marketing standpoint against the other stations. So for me, I look for opportunities like the Multicultural Reporter and the Medical Reporter to gain a competitive advantage over my competition, because that's an area that's a voided area right now.
Now, you kind of brought up, again, some of the advantages of being a local owner. And the first one that you mentioned was passion. I mean, you care. Now, we have a local ownership here, and I can think of a few really concrete ways that having local ownership benefits the company. But I would like to know from your perspective, I mean, what specifically are things that you can do as a local owner that puts you at an advantage to the non-local owners?
So for me, most broadcast stations are corporate owned. I'm a unicorn out here. I really am. I'm a unicorn out here doing what I'm doing. Again, my competitive advantage, what I bring as a local owner, there is no corporate bureaucracy with me. When people say, how's your corporate? And I'm sitting down, I'll spin around in my chair and I'll say, you're looking at corporate right here. You're looking at the guy that can make the decision today. For me, the speed of doing business is expedited when I'm the local owner and I'm a hands-on operator. I'm involved in the day-to-day operation. I believe employees that are used to a corporate environment will make an adjustment and really appreciate a local owner environment. I believe local clients that are used to a corporate interaction, they're going to enjoy working directly with the local owner. And I think with all that being said, those are competitive advantages that can't be duplicated by any of my competitors.
Let me switch gears for a sec.
Sure.
So you're the only African-American owner of a TV station in a top 25 U.S. market. Why aren't there more Black owners of TV stations?
I'll give you two answers to that. There's only 210 odd TV markets. When those broadcast licenses were offered for sale by the government, what was going on in our country in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, you had the civil rights movement. And unless you knew somebody with the federal government and understood broadcast licenses, you didn't get an opportunity to get the four or five TV licenses that were being offered for sale. And once they were offered to sale, certain families and big companies bought them up. So there's not many licenses, if any, broadcast TV stations licenses being offered for sale by the U.S. government anymore. They're all in the hands of legacy families from the 50s, 60s, and 70s and large corporations. People don't trade these or get rid of them too often because TV, free over-the-air broadcast TV, is very valuable, and there's now barriers to entry. So if you did not get TV stations when they were first auctioned, or you weren't part of the network, if you will, to buy those existing or trade those existing stations with people that were in the know in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you were left on the outside looking in. People forget that broadcast TV stations are owned by the taxpayer. We lease our airspace and we have fiduciary responsibilities that are set by the government that we have to fulfill to keep those licenses. So if you didn't get those TV stations early on and you didn't know how to break into the game, it was a very, very tough get for an African-American or a female to get broadcast TV stations. Knock on wood, I'm just fortunate I figured out a way to purchase TV stations.
Is that way replicable? Can you help other Black owners make more inway into the industry?
Yes. I learned how to buy TV stations by participating in a program put on by the NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, called the Broadcast Leadership Training Program. And this program was founded by a wonderful lady by the name of Diane Sutter. And Diane Sutter worked for the Disney family. And she found out back 20 years ago that she wanted to help women and people of color get in the game of buying TV stations and radio stations. I took the course at the NAB that taught me how to get in the game. My ambition, my drive, and my operating experience after learning the levels of financing, learning how to play the game to get in broadcasting. After I figured that out, I bought television stations, and that's where San Angelo and Abilene came. I give back to that program. I'm a frequent speaker. I've been a dean. I've sponsored the program. I've sponsored people to go through the program. That is the foremost recognized program to help other people of color, underserved communities that want to try to get into the broadcast game, whether it be radio or TV. That is the program that teaches people how to do it. And I fully support that since I participated in the program from 2007 and 2008.
So you, you're in the process of moving from, is it Houston to Indianapolis?
Yeah. So yeah, right now I have a place in Indianapolis. It's a temporary place, but we'll have eventually have a permanent place.
And you're going to be in the office every day.
I'll be in the office as much as needed, put it that way.
Well, let's check in about a year and see how things are going.
I would love to do that.
My thanks again to DeJuan McCoy. IBJ's Anthony Shetley has a full profile of DeJuan in the latest edition of IBJ, with some added perspective from industry experts and people who have worked for or with DeJuan over his career. And I wanted to draw your attention to a few other stories. Mickey Shuey takes a close look at how the Indiana Pacers plan to reconfigure the hospitality offerings in Bankers Life Fieldhouse as part of its massive revamp. The tastes of corporate ticket holders have changed. They're not as interested in traditional suites and club seating, which is forcing teams to figure out new options for them. Also in this week's issue, Lindsay Erdody reveals a surprising gender gap in the leadership of Indianapolis not-for-profits. Although a vast majority of not-for-profit employees are female, only 25% of the 100 largest not-for-profits in the Indy area have women CEOs or presidents or executive directors. And Susan Orr reports on a legal dispute between Indianapolis-based Rolls-Royce North American Technologies and a fellow military contractor over new laser weaponry that Rolls has been developing over the last decade. You can find these stories in the latest issue of IBJ, which, of course, you have delivered to your home or office, or online at IBJ.com. And remember, for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit the subscribe button. Hey, thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.